Sherry Rupert, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And so the Stewart Indian School in Carson City operated for almost a century before closing back in 1980. Tell me about its beginnings. When and why did it open?
Back in the late 1800s, the federal government perceived that there was an Indian problem. And the Indian problem was that the tribes at that time didn't want to give up their lands to the federal government. So they came up with the idea of the federal Indian boarding schools and began to institute that across the nation. The Stewart Indian School was one of the first 25 schools established in the nation. It was the only off-reservation boarding school in the state and was actually created by an act of state legislature in 1888.
How many students attended early on?
The school opened with about 37 students and three teachers. So it was very small in the beginning. And then later on, as we look through the enrollment records, we can see that there were about 500 students there at the height of its population.
Sherry, early on, the main mission of the Stewart Indian School was to assimilate Native American children into the white culture. Can you talk about early on how that was done?
When the students arrived at these schools, they were really stripped of anything and everything that made them Indian. You know, their traditional items were taken. They were no longer able to speak their native languages. And if they didn't abide by the rules, there were harsh punishments that were given out, doing additional chores. And they weren't things like just, you know, taking out the garbage or, you know, something as simple as that, but actually cleaning the wooden floors or the bathrooms with a toothbrush for a week. And I've also heard of early on, you know, harsh beatings and things like that. These children were really scared when they got there. They didn't speak the English language. They didn't know what instructions were being given to them. This was a new world to them.
And Sherry, one of those children was Florence Millett. As a young girl, Florence was taken from her family and sent to Stewart, where she wasn't allowed to speak her own native language of Shoshone. She talked to me recently about the experience and her repeated attempts to run away from the school. Let's take a moment to listen to that.
Each time I'd run away, there'd be few of us. We just ran through the brushes. Didn't know how far we lived from here. We were just running. It's how much we hated it. And they'd find us and take us back. Most of us had real long hair, and they'd cut each time. By the time I left there, I had real short hair.
Sherry, we just heard from Florence Millett, who's obviously still deeply affected by her time at Stewart, which was more than 60 years ago. Even though these assimilation practices took place a long time ago, are there consequences that you see playing out today?
There definitely are. Because we weren't able to speak our language at these schools, our language was lost in some cases, and we have very few fluent language speakers in some of our tribes. And so we now see a resurgence of language revitalization within some of those tribes. And so we're trying to bring that language back, but it's very difficult to do that. And you also hear descendants of alumni talk about how their grandfather went to the school and was made to feel so shameful that they were American Indian that when they got out of school, they refused to teach their children and their grandchildren the language because they felt that that was bad and shameful and that they didn't want their children to have to go through what they went through. Another point that I bring up frequently is our relationship with education. We hear all the time about parent involvement, how important that is. And I think our educators also need to understand the relationship American Indians have had with education and why it might not be such an inviting environment for children of alumni, descendants, or either the alumni themselves, if they should be, you know, raising their grandchildren, for example, for them to have to go into the schools might not be an environment that they're comfortable with. And then there's the whole nurturing, because some children came to the school as young as 4 years old. And so when you don't have your parents there, or your grandparents, your aunties or uncles to to nurture you, to care for you, to tell you that they love you on a daily basis, and all you have is a dorm matron, then how do you grow up and teach your children how to be nurturing and loving? And so I think some of that was lost as well.
In your role, how do you work to bring back what was lost?
Well, in my role at the Nevada Indian Commission, what we've done is made it a priority at the commission to preserve that history of the Stuart Indian School. And sometimes people ask me why. You know, why would you want to preserve something that was bad? Well, my answer is that it's a history that we should not forget. It's a history that is not widely known, is not widely taught, and we need to bring that to awareness. We need to bring that to the forefront and teach people about these things because it's a part of who we are as American Indian people, and really it's a part of who we are as Nevadans and who we are as a part of this nation.
Sherry, at some point, the school shifted away from this focus of assimilation and became a school that a lot of the younger alumni have a lot of pride in. What prompted that change, and what are some of the good things that the school is known for?
Many of the policies began to change after the 1930s. Federal Indian policy began to change in 1934 with the Indian Reorganization Act. And the federal government was now recognizing the sovereignty of tribes. And that means that the tribes have the inherent right to govern themselves. And so this is a point in history where the tribes were encouraged to draw up their own constitutions, determine their future and who their members were going to be. So things started to change at Stuart. And also at this point in time, students had a choice. They could remain in the Indian boarding schools, or they could go to public school systems. And many chose to remain at the Indian boarding school because they felt that they were on a level playing field. Everybody there was American Indian. In the public school system, there was still a lot of discrimination against American Indians. At the Indian boarding schools, they were able to participate more easily on the football teams, student council, cheerleading, things like that. So it became a place where they wanted to be. And again, each person has their own individual experience at the Stuart Indian School. But many of the students at Stuart in the later years of the school really have a sense of pride about the school and are very loyal to the school. Many of the students that I spoke with talked about, you know, having three meals a day, having somewhere warm to sleep, and learning a trade, learning a vocation, help them in their later years to be able to provide for their families. So there were some good things, I think, that came out of this school for those particular students. But there are always going to be those students that didn't have a positive experience.
And how long have you been working on this effort to preserve the Stuart Indian School?
I've been working on the Stuart Indian School project for about a good 10 years. And through this last legislative session, we were able to get some legislation passed. We were able to get some funding to begin the planning for the Stuart Indian School Living Legacy Initiative.
Let's focus on that legislative session a little bit more. I think with lawmakers talking about the project, voting on bills, it sort of put this project on the map in terms of recognition and funding. So tell me specifically what this session accomplished for the project.
Really, I have to thank the governor, Governor Sandoval, for his support through this process. It was really him that started the awareness of this initiative through his mention in his State of the State address. Throughout the legislative process, legislators, as you said, were very supportive, and we were able to get legislation passed, and that would be SB 63. And that was a piece of legislation that created a gift fund for the Stuart Indian School and designated the Nevada Indian Commission as the coordinating agency for future uses and activities of the Stuart Indian School. That's really important because that now provides an opportunity to have tribal input into the future of the school. We have had many discussions in regard to our vision for what could be at the school. Of course, that includes the Stuart Indian School Cultural Center and a corresponding Welcome and Information Center. But long term, we would love to see a cultural heritage destination, a living history venue where people could come and experience really what it was like for these students, for students such as Florence, as we heard earlier, what it was like for her while she was at the school. And so I envision, you know, somebody coming and being checked into a dorm by a dorm matron and being assigned a number and a room, maybe even a uniform. I don't know. But, you know, at some point being marched off to the dining hall and marched off to the auditorium, maybe to take in a play or a movie in the evening. So we want to create this experience for people to enjoy the beautiful campus. So that's one piece. There was another piece of legislation that came out of the Department of Conservation Natural Resources, and that was AB 15. And that would sell off a few parcels of land in the Carson City area. Once those parcels were sold off, that would be put into a separate fund for the benefit of the Stuart Indian School.
Sherry, you've got the state funding coming through the pipeline, but what are some of the immediate steps you're taking right now in the preservation process?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is we've recognized that this school is on the National Register of Historic Places, but we feel that the school has even more prominence. And we're moving toward a national landmark designation for the campus. Now, we know that that doesn't guarantee additional funds for the school, but it does kind of bring it up a notch, bring it to a different level. And so we have submitted our letter of inquiry into the National Park Service, and they have come back and said that, you know, they concur. They believe that there may be some national significance there. And so we are going to move forward now with an application, a formal application to the National Park Service. We're also working toward developing a nonprofit fundraising arm, a sort of Friends of the Stuart Indian School. And so what we need next are construction dollars. We have some of the planning funds. And so in order to move forward, we need to secure construction funds.
And for those of our listeners who have never been to the site of the Stuart Indian School, can you describe the campus and some of the aspects of it that you're hoping to highlight?
The campus is 110 acres, and there's over 80 buildings, and they're beautiful multicolored stone buildings, natural stone from Nevada, from a local quarry in Carson City, and Hopi stonemasons from Arizona initially came in and did much of the masonry there, and then they began to teach the students and the faculty that craft, and they were able to assist with that.
Sherry, why have you devoted the last decade of your life to preserving the Stuart Indian School?
I feel really strongly about the Stuart Indian School. I have many family members that attended the school. My husband's family attended the school as well. His great-grandfather, grandfather, and grandmother all went to the school. So there's definitely a family connection to the school. But it's also, for me, a way to share the story, to educate the public on this era in our shared history, and also a way to educate our own people. Because, as I mentioned before, when these students went to the school, many times not only did they not want to teach the language, they just didn't want to talk about the school. And so this is a way to educate our own people and the descendants of some of those alumni about this period in time.
Sherry Rupert, Executive Director of the Nevada Indian Commission, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.